You're listening to Bit by Bit, July 16th, 2008, from the Building Learning Communities Conference. Hello and welcome. This is Bob Sprankle with Bit by Bit, a podcast by teachers for teachers. And we are going to BLC, the Building Learning Communities Conference with Alan November's group down in Newton, Massachusetts, 2008. We're going to start with the very first keynote from Ewan McIntosh with his keynote, Not All Native Wit, From Creativity to Ingenuity. Just an amazing keynote, loved it, and then I went to his follow-up after, which I recorded as well with his permission, and I'll try to get that up. I'm not sure I'll put that in the feed or just as a link to this because as an addendum, but we'll try to get it into the feed. I'll try to get up as many podcasts and as quickly as I can. So enjoy, check back often, and without further ado, Ewan McIntosh opening up the first day of the BLC Conference 2008.
So think like an island and imagine what it takes to really get kids to be excited while you're here. And with that, I want to introduce our incredible keynote speaker, Ewan McIntosh. Ewan hails from, you now live in Edinburgh, don't you? Edinburgh. And Ewan didn't know this, but I went to Edinburgh University. And I used my first computer there in city planning, overlays of variables of land use. Very clever people in Scotland with technology, always inventing stuff. And I didn't know Ewan personally, but I had read his blog. Ewan is the first keynoter that we've selected because of content he's generated over the web. So I hope he's good face-to-face. I hope you have some presentation skills. But your words on the web are quite good. And Ewan also has a wee little, I said that, didn't I? Wee little girl. I trust people who have tiny little children who might be worried about the future of the planet more than some of us older types are at the moment. And so with great, great, great admiration for Ewan's work and his ability to, as a lifelong learner, I certainly hope he will tickle your brain and stretch it beyond where it currently lies. So Ewan, great honor.
So not only is it a Mac, but it's a Mac with a new adapter. There we go. You guys can tell me if this actually comes through okay. So there's my blog, edu.blogs.com. So if you get bored, you can go there. This talk is hopefully going to tantalize you. It's hopefully going to challenge you as well. My job is with the Scottish Government, with Learning and Teaching Scotland, is their rather groovy title, National Advisor of Learning and Technology Futures, which is basically the man with the crystal ball, who's meant to know everything and who knows nothing. You can go and visit the wonderful ltscotland.org.uk site as well to discover more about the kind of work that we do. But this keynote is based around something I picked up on last year. Last year we were all talking about creativity. Creativity, creativity, creativity. And on the very last day, on the post of Mitch Resnick, I got a comment from Stephen Heppel, who's an eminent thinker, innovator, educationist. And Stephen was saying, it's got nothing to do with creativity. What we need is more ingenuity. Anyone can be creative. I can go and do my own Picasso up there and call it creative, but you won't buy it. You won't put it on your kitchen wall. It's not ingenious. Ingenuity is what would make the difference. And then the other thing that I noticed was that in workshops, everybody was saying, well, not everybody, a large number of people were saying, it's okay for him. He's younger than I am, or he's got more experience than I do, or they've got the equipment that we don't have. There were a lot of reasons for not doing stuff that were coming up, when all I could see was opportunity in this wonderful event. So that's where the title comes from, because I don't believe that getting this education thing right is anything to do with native wit, with being a born and bred wonderful teacher, or born with technology, being a digital native. I don't believe they exist. I know they don't exist. I spectated my daughter Katrina, who I can hear, she's moaning already, her first ever video Skype call with my mum and dad. And she went from pure fear to vague curiosity to coming to me for a hug, going to her mum for a hug, then drawing up closer to the computer and looking deeper into the screen, and then after about 4 minutes, a smile, because she realised that that two-dimensional box was her granny and granddad. It took her 4 minutes to go from being digital immigrant completely to feeling native with that technology. I gave her my Nintendo DS yesterday to give her something to do in the hotel room. And did she know how to play Dr. Kawashima's brain training? No. Did she ask? No. Did she have trouble working out which button to press? No. Apparently she's right-handed. She's 11 months old. So. The thing is, button syndrome hits teachers. Give a teacher a button, they ask, what do I do with it? Give a button to a young person, they click it and see. And so that's kind of what we're going to see today. I'm also very conscious that despite an increasing number of grey hairs, that this year, last summer, I really looked like I was 12. I look much older now, I've got these grey hairs coming in. I've not talked for that long. I'm young-ish. So I want to use you. I did a little bit of calculation. Can you see at the bottom left of the screen? It's very small. That's me. That's my 9 years of teaching education experience. Okay? This is kind of... let me see. This is from this row here, about halfway up. I did a little calculation working out what the average teaching expertise would be here. My 9 years just fades into comparison with the 13,000 years that I conservatively estimated for all of you. So we're going to use that, because it would be kind of silly for me to stand up here and say, here's the answer, folks, when you all have the answers already. So there is a very simple way to do this. I have here a second laptop. It's like a magic trick. I have a rolling refreshed screen here. And the rolling refreshing screen is going to tell me every 5 seconds what people say about whatever it is I'm saying. When I stumble like that, for example, you can say, ha ha, you doesn't have presentation skills. I will see it here with your name. All you have to do is go to twitter.com, and as long as you include the letters BLC08, I'll get it here. Why do I want that? Because I want to see whether what I'm saying makes sense, whether you actually understand any of it. You've laughed a few times already, so either someone standing behind me with a big laugh in the crowd, you're getting that. Maybe you want to get an example. I might go over something really quickly, and you wanted an example. And if I catch it in time, I might show you an example. Okay, so if you're on twitter.com, do it. If you're not on twitter.com, go and sign up now. You can do it in the first 2 minutes. The first 2 minutes isn't that good anyway, okay? So go and sign up for twitter.com, and as long as you include the word BLC08, I'll see your message. Now, I'm going to go through 5 points today, time allowing. 5 points. The very first point is that to get to understand technology, not just today, but next year, in 2 years' time, in 5 years' time, there's something absolutely crucial. You, as a human being, have to be interesting. And to be interesting, you've got to be interested in everything. Absolutely everything. And my first critique, if you like, of education is that we are far too concerned with education. We take ourselves incredibly seriously. There she is. Far too seriously. And education, to some degree, this was a teacher retiring, age 60, retiring after nearly 40 years in the classroom, saying that she thought education was overrated. That real education was happening outside the classroom, not in it most of the time. Now, I don't know if I agree with that. I don't know what I think about that, but I do believe in this. You've got to be interested in everything. What I thought I'd do is take you on a virtual day in the life of me to give you a picture. People think, I'm sure Alan thinks I'm some kind of cyborg that, you know, just sits in the front of a computer with a Bluetooth headset on all the time. I do. This was me on paternity leave doing my email. She doesn't fit in the army anymore. She's far bigger than that. But I wanted to show you what I do, because to be interested in everything, you've got to read and view a heck of a lot. Let's go in. First thing, my blog. My blog is my property. It belongs to me. I put on it what I like. You don't like it, don't visit. That's my view. I put up things I find. So I found this video yesterday, which I thought was nice. The first comment on it, which didn't think it was that good, because it was about itself rather than a subject in particular. I put up notes for conference sessions that I do. Vote for me, please, so I win this prize. I don't know what I win, but it'd be nice. I put links to things that people might not find. I write blog posts about really clever people who do incredibly clever talks at conferences, and try to make sense of it for myself. And if it's useful to you, that's great. But that's really the core of my day. And I will spend no more than half an hour writing on a blog on any one day. And if you look at the dates, you'll see I've not written on it for nearly 8 days, from July 4th through to July 15th, because I had nothing to say. It's important to realise when you need to belt it, because you've got nothing to say. So I just write when I've got something to say. No more than half an hour a day. Something that has taken on increasing importance is my bookmark collection. 2,500 bookmarks. All really cool stuff that will change the way that you think, certainly change the way I think. And I'm quite careful to make sure I categorise things in meaningful ways, so you can quickly find whatever you're interested in and home down on it. So if you're not sure what an ARG is, and now you are tantalisingly close to finding out, you click ARG, you find out all about alternate reality gaming. So that's incredibly important. But you'll notice this as well. I've been on vacation, which is why there's so many unread links. But people send me things they think I would be interested in. So I will go for a sesh on this, a session. I'll spend an afternoon just going through those 400 odd links, because it's worth it for me. It's my research and development. I'm also very keen to see what people are up to visually. I want to see what my friends and family are up to on Flickr. I want to see what's going on in the conference. So what was Marco doing for 2 days in the depths of this hotel? And you can find out. And there some of you are. Here I am, Chief So-and-so. I was helping her out there. So I can go and see what people are doing. It's really important. It's got nothing to do with work. But it's so that when I see Marco, I can have a conversation with him. When I see Marco, I can say, I was interested in what you were doing there in Lake Como. It looked fantastic. What was it? And we can strike up a conversation. I'm also interested in what my friends are doing on a pretty much constant basis. So I see that Lisa's become a fan of David Tennant, who is in Doctor Who, which is a favourite series of mine, so I might become a fan of David Tennant as well. I can see that Lorna keeps poking me, because she's not yet paid me my expenses from the last thing that I was doing, so I'll poke her back to remind her. This river of news is important to me. It's a very quick way for me to see what people are doing. And because people are as varied as the planet, Every time something different comes up in that river of news, I get interested in it. It's that kind of personality that wants to go and find out more. I think teachers, every teacher has that personality. Because you, the reason you become a teacher, I presume, is because you enjoy learning. Is that fair? Yeah? So, that's it. These are the four main tools that I will use. The other one I use is my aggregator. I read 2,500 blogs a day. And it takes me no longer than 45 minutes. Why? Because I don't read them all. Would you? What I'm interested in is having a group of experts who, when I need to know something about something in particular, I can just run and search and pick their brains. It's like, I've got friends in this audience, I don't know whether, if you're a friend of mine, if we're a friend online or we've met face to face and you've bought me a drink, can you pop your hand up? See, not many people buy me drinks. Okay, so I kind of see where you are. I now want to search your brains. How do I do that? The old-fashioned way is I have to interrupt this keynote, bore the rest of you, and go and speak to you face-to-face. Everyone laments the death of face-to-face. Well, face-to-face is great, but it's slow. If I want to see what's going on at VLC 08, I don't even know sometimes who's at a conference or an event. But I can see here someone's left. That's my dad and my mum leaving comments on photographs. I can see that H. Vicky is talking. I'm game to use you. I was trying to find one person who could use stream this. People wondering where to go. Blog posts that I've written. Someone blogging you, Alan. Be afraid, be very afraid. And then another post by me. So what does this tell you? It means that not a lot of my trusted entourage have yet blogged about BLC08 and used the word BLC08 in there. But I can also see who's talking about me. How many of you know who's talking about you? Would you like to know who's talking about you? I would. The other one is I can see who's talking about my daughter. Nothing. Good. That's the way to stay until she's 30. So it's really important to be able to keep tabs on what people are saying about your school, about your course, about your special area, about your favourite TV programme. And I just use that as a personal search engine. And then maybe once or twice a month, I'll go on a big purge and I'll just go and have a read in case there are things which I haven't searched for which are of interest. You'll also notice something else though, if I just go back to this. This is how I categorise my education blogs. EduBuzz is the project I was running in East Lothian in Scotland. The LTS is the organisation I work for. Scottish blogs, rest of UK, New Zealand, Canada, USA. Things that I can't work out the geography of. Australia, rest of Europe, Caribbean, Far East, Middle East, India, Africa, South America. This audience is mostly North American. Put your hands up if you read an African blog. Cool. They're all Canadians. Two of them are. Three of them. Okay. There's something in that, because I've not met many other people who do it this way. But I do know quite a lot of Scottish educators who do. And I think it's because we are not just on an island, but we're a tiny little part of an island. And we're keen to reach out to as big an audience as we can and find interesting people. So if there was one thing there, start reading. Start reading teachers who come from other places. You might not agree with everything they say, but their alternative views should be quite refreshing for you. And if you organise it that way, you can get a flavour for what's going on in different parts of the world. Find out what's happening in Australia. And then I hear this. I'll just turn the volume on there. Can we turn the volume on the computer? I'm plugged in on it. Basically, can we get the volume up eventually? Basically, this is a New York educator describing...
Out of the reach of most working class families.
Let's just go back, okay? Listen to this.
Well, let me give you a couple of quick data points. The average student in a New York City public school spends 1 hour a week using a computer. The average student in New York City public school's family has to pay $30 to $40 a month for broadband, which is $500 a year out of the reach of most working class families.
We are failing our students 1 hour a week. In the UK, students spend 200 minutes a day online, and they also spend an average of 1 hour a week on a computer in school. 60 minutes a week on a computer in school, 200 minutes, 1400 minutes a week on a computer on the net. That's in the UK. I don't know what the stats are for the States. Someone can maybe just go and Google that and tell us. And technology use is incredibly ineffective in schools. Again, this is a British statistic. And I have to say British, but it's actually an English statistic. Separate education system in England. England spent $2 billion last year on educational technology. And in an audit by the National Office of Statistics, they discovered that 1.6 billion of that was wasted, sitting unused or poorly used in classrooms. And there were teachers who chose not to come to this conference because they felt the money would be better spent on educational technology. Frankly, the money would be far better spent coming here talking with educators. 20% is used effectively and 80% is not. So it's not actually anything to do with the tools at all. It's got nothing to do with technology. It's all about how we use it that's going to be important here. Tanya Byron, who's written a report for the British government on safe internet use and gaming, said it's not the technology itself that is transformative, it's the school, the pedagogy that's transformative. If I hear another blogger say that technology is transformative, I might blow a gasket, because it's not. Technology is just stuff. And it's what we do with the stuff that makes it powerful. Which company do you think this is? It has 10 times fewer staff than company B. It has 10 times greater market capitalization at $600 million than B. Research and development is sacred and it's done by everyone. Which company do you think that describes? Oh, good guess, not quite. You might frown when you see it, but it's Microsoft. And what do you think the company B is? That it's 10 times fewer, Microsoft has 10 times fewer staff and 10 times more market capitalization. What do you think the other one is? McDonald's. Research and development makes Microsoft streamlined, but not enough staff to do the job. Does that sound familiar? Is that not your school? There are not enough staff to do what's required. Well, Microsoft staff complain of the same thing, despite the fact that they're quite big. They wouldn't mind more staff, or the people in the organisation wouldn't mind it. Research and development is sacred. Everybody is a research and developer. If you're not, you get fired. In your school, is everyone a research and developer? Are people there just paying the rent? What are we going to do to inspire them to become R&D people? Well, we're not going to do it this way. Futuristic gazing. This is what my job was meant to be about. These were predictions in the 60s of what we would be doing in the 70s. This was a food dispenser, an automatic food dispenser. Automatic insofar as the wife would still have to make the food a week in advance. Can you imagine eating that by Friday? You know, it's been sitting in plastic boxes on one side of the machine. And then all you do, it's got handy stools at the bottom so you can sit down, press the button, and a meal is presented to you warm. And you know it's going to be lukewarm, don't you? It's not going to be boiling hot. That was the first prediction. Another prediction was this. It was the listen to the radio in Delhi. That was the name of, that was like the advertising slogan. You adjusted the dial above which part of the world you wanted to listen to the radio in, and you'd be able to listen to the radio in Delhi. Have you ever listened to the radio in Delhi? It's not that good, really. But this is effectively what internet radio was trying to do 6 years ago. And then everyone's wondering, why is internet radio not really working? It's because people listen to local radio. They listen to radio that makes sense to them with music they like. And internet radio failed, and that's where companies like Last.fm have come in to make a killing, because Last.fm creates a music station based on the music you already listen to. My music station. You can go and visit it, last.fm/YourMacintosh, and you can see what my taste in music is like. You really need to. And this one, the push-button teaching machine. There are some companies at NEC still selling this for lots of money, and people buy it, which is even more worrying. Yeah, This was designed to alleviate the stress on the teacher by allowing the student to read a text and then press the button for the right answer. And of course, great technology, awful pedagogy. So the buttons all work, it does what it says in the tin, but that doesn't mean it's good. And the problem with trying to predict what technology is going to bring us in the future is that we start concentrating on the tool without thinking about why would you do this in the first place. Clay Shirky has a wonderful phrase: tools don't get socially interesting until they get technologically boring. And that's where we're at. So what's the most technologically boring tool that's socially interesting for most teachers? What tool is it that brings most people in this room together? Email. I think, without a doubt. More than Twitter, more than social networks, more than any of these things. Email. Why? Because it's dead easy to use. Anyone can use email, more or less. And we think it's intuitive. Why is it intuitive? Because we've seen it for a long time. It's familiar. Do you remember when email was first introduced? Can you remember? I can't, because I've always had it. Even when I was six, we had Prestel at home on the ZX Spectrum. This is 1984. And Prestel allowed you to send messages back and forth. I've been used to some form of electronic communication since I communicated in that way. And I remember university having email for the first time and didn't think anything of it. It was quite handy. But I now can't think what I would do without it. It's very familiar, it's very intuitive. Intuitive doesn't mean it's easy to use. Why is Twitter not used? Hands up if you're using Twitter here. Why is Twitter not used by everyone else? Because it's actually not that familiar. So even if the tool has been designed incredibly well, even though it is easy to use, it's not intuitive because it's not familiar to people. But for young people, social networks are the intuitive media. Social networks are what are familiar. And this is where we have a disconnect. 90% of 15 to 25-year-olds have visited their social network in the past month. Hands up if you've visited your social network in the past month. Tech conference. We can see that. Go to your school staff room and ask the same question at your own staff meeting. And record the result. Blog the result. And we'll do a big crowdsourcing project. If you target BLC08, you'll find all the results. I'd be interested in pulling that together to find out what are the staff rooms of America, of Canada, of Africa, what are they doing in terms of social networking. MySpace would be the third biggest country in the world. Can you imagine saying that you know, it's first of all it's China, then India, then MySpace. Then it's America. And it's Indonesia after that. Can you imagine being in a contemporary history class talking about China, India, United States, and just leaving out MySpace, when MySpace occupies an area greater than the United States of America? That's what we do. It's a very strange thing. The system's wrong. 130 million blogs are tracked by Technorati, 2 new blogs every second, 17.5 new blog posts every second. Huge amount of content being put up, and it's being put up by some of your students. So, what does this allow them to do? Why is social networking so good? Because it allows the barely motivated to become activists. You can be emailed, you have to know people to send an email to them. Social networking, you can be Billy No Mates, and you can still become an activist. I'm going to show you one example. In Edinburgh, last year, they wanted to close 22 local schools. And on the news, I noticed something. I noticed that all the students who were protesting about it had the same slogan. I thought, how did they do that? And in about 30 seconds, I found it. They did it through their Bebo page. Students Against Closures, which quite nicely says SAC, and they wanted to sack the council who were going to close their schools. And there's the image there, and you can see that why I was kind of amused, because students against closures. Small schools, big companies. See, Unison is a trade union. And they were also there. So, Save Our Schools, SOS. What I noticed is that they'd used people to coordinate their attack on City Hall. So, 600 young people marching down the street at the same time, the same day, going to the same place, with the same slogans. It was very powerful. Do you know what? They won. The schools were all kept open, thanks to the pressure they put on. They had, at the height, about 500 members, 500 fans of this. The leaders of this put up newspaper reports, because young people don't read newspapers. So they put up newspaper reports about what was going on, about them being seen. And, hey, just letting you all know that the City of Edinburgh Council are considering closing a few primary schools again. All I know for certain is that Westburn Primary is one of them. So could you please sign this to keep them open? That was 4 weeks ago. So the argument's coming back, and the social network's coming back into its own. All these people are going to be brought back in. Talk about civic action. This is civic innovation. What was slightly depressing was that the teachers were doing the same thing on Facebook. And the teachers didn't know what the students were doing, and the students didn't know what the teachers were doing. 500 teachers in the Facebook group, which is the more kind of adult social network. What it told me is that teachers don't talk to their students in school face-to-face about what they do online. So if there's one takeaway from this, it's to set aside some time to talk about that. What kind of things do they get up to? What was satisfying is that the Prime Minister's petition site had half the combined number of members compared to the social networks. So social networks were more powerful than the democratic tool created by the government in power at that time. So social networks are intuitive for this group. They allow the barely motivated to become activists. It would be great if the barely motivated learner could become an active learner. You do see it in some pages. I showed this last year, I'm going to show it again now. This is a Bebo profile page, pretty typical. But this girl has written about a school trip that she was on. And the writing that she has done, when you get past the first paragraph, so this trip was the shiz, means it was really good. And then you go down, and you get down to about halfway, and the writing is superb. Until you've been to places like Notre Dame de Lorette and seen the sheer scale of graves, or Hunter Cemetery, and seen the graves of people who went to the same schools I go to now, you won't understand how it feels. You won't understand how it feels to look upon the tens of thousands of graves and think those people gave their lives for me. Now, her teacher had set up a blog. Her teacher had set up a blog for this trip, and nobody wrote on it. Why? Because kids who go on to these social networks do not consider themselves part of 180 million users, or 100 million users, or 40 million users. They see themselves as a community of about 20, or about 30. And those 20 or 30 friends are the most important audience to them, more important than the audience that would go to the school blog. Who would go to the school blog? Simple answer? Teachers, head teacher, parents, uncool people go to the school blog. The people that you care about go to your Bebo page and see your best work. Now, I'm not saying we use Bebo or MySpace in school, I'm saying we learn from it. What can you learn by looking at the anatomy of a social network and translate that into classroom teaching? I got a great little quote here on how this works. Hermann von Helmholtz, he was German, came up with the first kind of definition of creativity, because what we're seeing there is a form of creativity. He says the first thing that we need to do in the creative cycle is saturate ourselves. Saturation is where you just go and immerse yourself in as much stuff as you possibly can. And you do it as long as you want to do it. The second thing you need to do is incubate. Incubation is what I was doing last night. Did you notice that I was feeling a little bit uncomfortable at dinner last night? Did it come over? No. I was. I was very worried about this keynote because I had all the bits. I had saturated. I'd gone beyond saturation. I was a very wet sponge. Incubation was happening last night. It's an uncomfortable feeling. People call it the Pareto principle. You know, the 80%, 20%. The 80% of the effort happens 20% of the time. 20% of the result happens over blah, blah, blah. You get the idea. Anyway, incubation is where you leave it to settle. It's where you go and have a bath. Who did that? Any science teachers here? Who did that? Who went to have a bath for his incubation? Archimedes. Other people went for walks. Other people sat underneath trees and had apples fall on them. That's incubation. And then the last one's illumination. Aha! Ding! Apple falls on head. You have an idea which you want to exploit. Now, we did this retrospectively. All good models which don't really work in practice are done retrospectively, and that's what that is. But what's interesting about that Bebo page that we've just looked at, it's complete and it's divergent. The Bebo page and her network of friends is incredibly rich. Have you ever seen how often Bebo pages are updated, or MySpace pages? All the time, every evening. See how many are online at 7 o'clock at night, at 2 o'clock in the morning. constantly completing, constantly updating. They're very divergent. So you'll have goths being friends with funky chicks, you'll have funky chicks being friends with the macho boys. Very divergent groups of people getting together on social networks. And divergence is really important for creativity. Very difficult question though, do schools encourage divergent thinking? Schools are all about convergence. You have one exam that you get the right answer to. To be a success at school, you have to be convergent. To be a success in the real world, you have to be divergent. Incubation needs to have no deadlines. Social networking does not have a deadline. You do not have to be on a stage at 9 o'clock in the morning with a social network. You choose to interact when you have an idea. If you have nothing for 10 days, then you go away for 10 days. Is that me or someone else? An illumination to a big crowd or to an important crowd. So you share your idea with a worthwhile audience. I'm very fortunate to be able to share it with you. Hopefully you think this is half decent. I'm looking at the Twitter thing trying to gauge it. But illumination to a crowd that matters to you is really important. In school, what is the audience for students' work? Mostly. One person, the teacher. Two, if they read their own work over. Maybe four, if they show it to their parents, but we're pushing it now. So we've got to illuminate these ideas and creative outputs to larger audiences. Divergent thinking is absolutely my goal. Now I'm going to show this quickly. This is from Sir Ken Robinson's recent talk at the RSA. This is a map of the United States of America. And the colour coding, the darker the colour, the more prescription. That was last night's food. No. The darker the colour, the more prescriptions were given for drugs that help children with ADHD. Now, what happened in Arkansas? What happened in Arkansas? I've been to California, I know why they don't have ADHD. You get to Texas, they start getting fidgety. Arkansas is something goes wrong. Could explain a lot about some previous talks. And then you go down to Louisiana. Brian, where's Brian Mull? Is there a problem in Louisiana that we don't know about? And then you go up to the States, the top up there. Now, I'm not going to say what I think this is about. I'm not a doctor. I don't want to say that ADHD does not exist. It does, probably, maybe. But what this shows is that there is no pandemic. There is no pandemic. Children are not becoming more ADHD. More children are maybe becoming bored. More children are perhaps finding school irrelevant. And school is the reason we are giving them drugs, because they need to be quiet, sit down, put your pencil down, get on with the work. Divergent thinking is not encouraged, and ADHD sufferers, people who are on these drugs, they're being quelled to be convergent, because they are divergent. And it's hitting academia. You may be familiar with this.
My name is Johnny Lee.
This is Johnny Lee, as he says. You can tell he's a PhD, can't you? He's studying for a PhD. And my question to you is, does he have to finish it? Because what Johnny Lee has done is take everything I've just talked about in that first part and made a dissertation out of it. Johnny Lee likes his Nintendo Wii. And if I take it to about here, he takes a pair of glasses with infrared sensors on the side. He's made a little program which you can download from his YouTube video and using your own computer. He's taken a video camera and reversed it. So the Wiimote is currently on the television, not in your hand. And the strip that the Wiimote interacts with is on the camera, not in the television. And when he switches it on, he creates, instead of a nice two-dimensional image, he creates this, a 3D image. And he's been studying for years to discover this. And then Nintendo Wii came along and helped him out. Now, he put this on YouTube. 5.5 million people have viewed this video. He's been invited to speak at the greatest conferences other than BLC at the world. TED conference. He's now got games developers knocking his door down because they want to use his technology to make shoot-em-ups even more realistic. They want to make adventure games even more exciting. Big question. because he needs to finish his PhD. Johnny has inadvertently discovered what this new world is about. He is a divergent thinker. He does not need to do well in school to succeed. He can do well in spite of school. This was a side project to his PhD. It's not his actual PhD. Let's move on to the second point. Big question. What is a quality teacher? Quality teachers are the most important factor in improving education systems. Nothing else. Not money, not class sizes, the quality of the individual teacher. When I was in New Brunswick, I saw a teacher with a class size of 70. It was the best class I've ever seen taught, bar none. She was a superb teacher. It's not me saying it. This was the McKinsey report last year that came out. The quality of an education system cannot exceed the quality of its teachers. So if you've got teachers just there to pay the rent, that explains a lot about the education system in whichever country you come from. The only way to improve outcomes is to improve instruction, not to give them more tests. We need to deliver for every child, not just the ones we like, not just the ones that don't smell. Every child. And these are three very hard things to do. So I'm going to ask you the question. The first 30 people to respond by text message will see their message appear on screen. You put the number 41411 into your phone. It will cost you standard text message rates. You write the word say, and I hope this works, and you put in your message, what is a quality teacher? If it doesn't work, I apologise in advance for wasting your cell phone. We should see the results here. I've opened the polls. We'll see if they come up. In the meantime, I'm going to give you some entertainment. Oh, say two. Here it is. Do it there. You see there? Say 24902 and your message to 41411. There's your instruction. Good stuff. Any of you like Taylor Mali? Yeah? Right. Do you mind a bit of Taylor Mali with a Scottish accent while we wait for what is a quality teacher to come through? I like it. If you don't know the poem, hopefully you're in for a treat. See, he says, the problem with teachers is, what's a kid going to learn from someone who decided his best option in life was to become a teacher? He reminds all the other dinner guests that it's true what they say about teachers. Those who can, do. Those who can't, I decide to bite my tongue instead of his and resist the temptation to remind other dinner guests that it's also true what they say about lawyers. Because we're eating, after all, and it's his polite company. I mean, you're a teacher, Alan, he says. Be honest. What do you make? You don't have to answer that. And I wish he hadn't done that. Asked me, to be honest. Because you see, I have a policy about honesty and ass-kicking. If you ask for it, I have to let you have it. You want to know what I make? I make kids work harder than they ever thought they could. I make a C-plus feel like a Congressional Medal of Honour and an A-minus feel like a slap in the face. How dare you waste my time with anything but your very best? I make kids sit through 40 minutes of study hall in absolute silence. No, you may not work in groups. No, you may not ask a question. Why won't I let you get a drink of water? Because you're not thirsty. You're bored. That's why. I make parents tremble in fear when I call home. I hope I haven't called at a bad time. I just wanted to talk to you about something Billy said to me. Billy said, leave that kid alone. I still used to cry sometimes, don't you? And it was the noblest act of courage I've ever seen. I make parents see their children for who they are and what they can be. You want to know what I make? I make kids wonder. I make them question. I make them criticise. I make them apologise. I mean it. I make them write, write, write. And then I make them read. I make them spell definitely beautiful, definitely beautiful. D-E-F-I-N-I-T-L-E-Y. E-E-A-U-T-I-F-E-L. Over and over and over again until they will never misspell either one of those words ever again. I make them show all their work in math and hide it all in their final drafts in English. I make them understand that if you've got this and then you follow this, and if someone ever tries to judge you by what you make, then you give them this. Let me break it down for you so you know what I say is true. I make a goddamn difference. What about you? There you go. I'm presuming none of you have text plans because your messages are not coming through. Let's just see what we've got. Anything? Okay, that was an experiment that didn't work. But you got a free poem. So, what is a quality teacher? Well, I think a quality teacher is something that's not this. I was doing a workshop with a bunch of international teachers in Glasgow. This was a teacher from France. Nothing against France, my wife is French. But it's a rather traditional teacher attitude. Why would I start students writing by playing a computer game? I know nothing about it, and it would be easier for me to show them a film. Now, I was a French teacher that loved showing a good film to the class in French. Lovely way to learn about the culture. But it's not their culture, it's my culture. What she should have been saying, instead of all these I's and me's, was the they's and them's. My students need to start right by playing a computer game. They know everything about that, and it would be easier for them than watching a film. She didn't say that. No love was lost. But sometimes, I think, the answers are under our noses. And we fail to see them. Are you familiar with this meme? Do they do it in the Marriott here? I can't remember.
Yeah.
I didn't look closely enough at my toilet paper. I spent the last month travelling across America trying to understand your culture better. I avoided the chinos. I'm keeping my jeans. But the toilet paper meme got me. There's actually a PhD who did this. She looked at toilet paper around the world. Now, the thing with toilet paper that does this is it's completely pointless. The sticker over the top of the toilet paper, so that you know you're unlocking that roll for the first time. In a box, for your convenience. Except, when you really need it, that box just gets in the way. This one, which I just don't get. This is actually my photo. This is from the Safari Inn in Burbank. It's the one most wonderful retro hotel ever. And every day, the maid came back and did this. Now, what's slightly worrying, excuse me, see the wet patch? Not only is this meme completely pointless, it's also unhygienic. It defeats the purpose of the toilet roll, to be hygienic, because I've got some dirty maid's hands all over my toilet roll. And then this one is the pièce de résistance. I got permission to use all these photos from Flickr. They were all rights reserved. These are very proud photographers that took these pictures. This one is the pièce de résistance. This is toilet paper sculpture. That's a rose on top of the... Why am I showing you toilet paper? Because in education, we sometimes do really pointless things and never question them. Until this day, until this moment, did you ever question why you folded the corner of a toilet paper? You will now. Every time you go to a hotel, you'll question it. You'll ask your wife or husband or lover, why did they cross the thing? I'm going to show you this as well, a little experiment, okay? Let's take a little look. This is the colour-changing card trick.
Hi, I'm Richard, this is Sarah, and we're going to perform the amazing colour-changing card trick with this blue-backed deck of cards. Now, the idea is very simple. I'm just going to spread the cards in front of Sarah and ask her to push any card towards the camera.
Okay, let's see. I'm going to go for this card here.
Okay. Now, Sarah could have selected any card at all from the deck. But she selected the card, which is now face down on the table. And what I'm going to ask her to do is show us which card she selected.
Right, so the card that I chose was, in fact, the Three of Diamonds.
The Three of Diamonds, okay, an excellent choice. That card goes back into the deck. Now I'm just going to spread the cards face up on the table. Give a little click of the fingers, and you'll see that Sarah's card here has now got a blue back. Not particularly surprising, what's slightly more surprising is all of the other cards have got red backs. And that is the amazing colour changing. You
didn't see it happen. Most of you. Some of you did, and did a very good job of not laughing too loudly. Things are under our noses, and we don't see them because we're too busy looking at the toilet paper or thinking about the test that we have to do. There is an assumption that because you have to do tests, you have to do them. There is an assumption about a lot of pedagogy that children need input before they can have output. There's also just not looking closely at what we do. This is Al Upton and I in NET. We had a cracking afternoon. We just went away and we had lunch together, and then we acted like a pair of 14-year-olds going around NET. You may have seen my Twitter messages when we were acting like 14-year-olds. This was him with a free gift from District 1 in Arkansas. First of all, put your hands up if you're from Arkansas. Okay, I apologise. Are you from District 1? I apologise even more. Because the communications department in Arkansas didn't spot this one. And I don't know how they missed it. This is an education institution that probably blocks web pages containing these words, yet produces thousands of glow pens for attendees at a national showcase. I was astonished. Sometimes we don't see what's under
the
our nose.
We see the world.
In America, United States of America, you have a particularly hard lot. The media doesn't help you. This is the real world, and this is the world as it's presented to you. For real. Where's Africa? Where's Europe? Europe's the pink pimple up there. South America has been reduced to a snot. 90% of the world's audiovisual turnover comes from LA-based media corporations. The media affects the way we reflect. Most Americans watch local news. International content is about 10%, 9 or 10% of local news. The international content, so that 9 or 10%, is limited to Iraq. Do you know what the biggest story was after Iraq? Do you know what the biggest, second biggest story last year was after Iraq? It was the death of Anna Nicole Smith. This is why we need to read further, wider. We need to do far more in that respect. And it happens here. You know, this recognises politician. You think you recognise her. And if I turn it round to about 45 degrees, you're going to be quite comfortable with it. And then you start noticing strange things. But her eyes and mouth are upside down. Now, you didn't maybe pick up on that the first time you saw the image, because it was familiar. So what we do as teachers is we see pedagogies or we see technologies, and we look at it and we say, I know what that does, I'm not interested, or I'm interested. We make a decision in the blink, on the moment. We decide that piece of technology won't do what I want it to do, I'm not going to go and investigate. Or, the contrary, we dive so deep into a tool that we forget what it was we're trying to do in the first place. We kind of saw a familiar thing but didn't. I'll just show it so I'm not politically biased. You just want it completely horrific that way around and completely horrific that way around. Now, will I get out of the country now? Yeah. The other one here, some answers are already there. This guy stood in the street, 2,000 people walked past, only 27 people went and asked him for a £5 note. This conference is going to lay a heck of a lot out on your doorstep. It's going to leave you with so many ideas, it's incredible. You know, they're all there for the taking. All you have to do is ask. You've got international educators with a different outlook from the one in your local area. You need to go and ask. You've got speakers who will not have enough time to share all the things that they want to share, but who will be sitting in the bar. You just have to go and ask. If you don't ask, you don't get. But likewise, we need to listen to what we're hearing, which is a big problem sometimes as well. But sometimes, again, a bit like the Margaret Thatcher picture, we assume that we know what it is we're seeing. We even get used to the system. I'm going to show this video. I want you to take a look. This has been commissioned.
Bueno, mi nombre es Eduardo Reyes y vivo en Pacoima, California, pero vengo de México, vengo de Aguascalientes, México. Actualmente estoy en un sistema de Estados Unidos que le llaman tracking, que prácticamente es dividir a los estudiantes en tres secciones. Y pues yo estoy en la sección A. En la sección A, desgraciadamente, existen muchos programas vocacionales en lugar de tener programas que incitan a los estudiantes a atender a la universidad. Aquí nos enseñan más bien a hacer cosas con las manos, a agarrar habilidades que podemos usar, así como carpintería, como ser mecánicos o como hacer comida en el programa de artes culinarias. Entonces yo pienso que el dividir a los estudiantes en un programa en una sección donde los estudiantes nada más van a hablar español, yo no pienso que esté bien. Yo pienso que siempre tiene que haber una igualdad para todos, porque la mera verdad me siento como que nos avientan a un lugar donde todos hablan español, donde nosotros nada más tenemos las metas de ir a un programa vocacional, a atender algo que no necesariamente queremos, pero no lo ponen ahí, no lo ponen enfrente. Y
part of a 24 podcast series that's going to be launched by Learning and Teaching Scotland, produced by Alas Media, who are here doing some filming as well. Hands up if this shocks you. Hands up if this is just normal day-to-day life and you expect that from your system. A lot of people didn't know what to think. They've not put up their hand. For me, that's shocking. That's a system that does not want to encourage every child. Every child, without exception. Sometimes we get so used to the system we don't question it. And my question to you is, who is going to question it? You chose to come here in your vacation time. Your districts have paid for you to come here. Some of you have paid for it yourself. You are empowered. You have been empowered to create change. And I have a feeling that the change has to happen in your system. Now I'm going to cut to the chase on a couple of things. I've three more points. The first one, though, is very, very quick. None of this is new. We need to achieve some kind of shared awareness of our goals, and it isn't easy. It means that we have to work with our students. Obama does it. He may well win the next US election on it. Democrats always use celebrities in their election campaigns. Have you noticed that? You look back. What celebrity is Obama using this time around? You. Young people. He's using YouTube. He's using democratic citizen media. Is creativity taught or caught? For me, creativity is like a pinball game. The only way you get better at a pinball game is by playing the same game over and over again. The minute you go to a second one, you can't play it. Chess, you can teach. Pinball, you can't. Creativity, you can't teach. It's the pinball. Tools, you can teach. But it's not about tools. You have to take risks. There is no such thing as risk-free creativity. And this means sitting down with directors, sitting down with superintendents, and looking at risk in a very positive way instead of a negative accountability way. So what is positive risk? Go and explore that. In Scotland, positive risk for us was spending $75 million connecting every school in the country with each other. So risk, it might fail. But we're willing to give it a shot. Another risk, kind of, but not really, is this. Anyone idea what that's a picture of? Good. Cell phones. It's 426,000 cell phones. It's the number of cell phones thrown away in the United States every day. Oh, why are they thrown away? They want the best one. They want the one that does all the cool stuff, that accesses the web, that gives them Google Answers, the ones that we block in schools, that we don't allow them to bring in. The rest of the world is cottering on to mobile phones or cell phones. Increasingly in Scottish schools you will see them in classrooms being used, and you'll certainly see them in the corridors. It's social time being used for social purposes. There are currently 3 billion mobile users in the world. There will be 500 million new ones by Christmas time. That means that there are more mobile phone users than internet users. So it's good to get hung up in the net. That's fine. Get enthusiastic about the interwebs, as McCain calls them. But cell phones are where the action's at. Cell phones are where the future is going to be. They allow you a shared awareness because they're in your pocket. They allow me to receive messages on my cell phone instead of having to have a second laptop to read what's going on our mobile world here. They allow people to get together for flash mobs. They allow people to get in the real world to become activists. So this here is in Belarusia. This is a protest of people reading banned authors in front of the parliament. They did it through cell phones. They had a shared awareness of the task in hand, and they did it. The Space Shuttle Columbia may not have exploded mid-air, may not have had the problem coming back in, had there been a shared awareness. Engineers knew about the problems that were going to happen, but they weren't able to share what they were feeling. So shared awareness is really important for learning objectives. What you consider a learning objective may be a very different shared awareness with your children. They may not share it the same way. They may not see the same perspective. The fourth point, and I'm going to maybe end on this one. The fifth point was three questions, but I think I've given you plenty of questions. The fourth point here is on participation culture. It's really not about tools. There are a lot of workshops here that will give you the handicraft of using a particular tool, and that's great. You need time to play. Everyone needs time to play. But you've got to understand the underlying participation culture that young people breathe, live and breathe today. It's not about public and private, having two faces. It's about having a lot of grey areas. It's about having a new form of identity. It's not just about, I go to school and I'm a teacher, I come home and I'm a mum or dad. It's all the grey areas in between. What is your online identity in relation to your face-to-face identity and all the bits in between? It occupies six spaces, secret spaces, private text messages back and forth. It occupies group spaces that depend on the power of the group to gel people together. It depends on publishing spaces where you fling something out and hope someone finds it. Performing spaces where you can pretend to be someone you're not, because when you're 15 it's not always fun to be you. And it's good fun to go and experiment being someone else. About participation spaces. Marches, meetings, markets, we've seen that already. And unfortunately, the one that schools do very well, it's the one that you've done very well for the last hour, watching spaces. Television, gigs, theatre, conferences, lectures. Every lesson you do, I challenge you to use every space. Or at least start to make a dent in the ones further up the screen. Final point, let me just jump. I had lots of cool stuff, but I didn't know what to show you. So I'll put it all online and you can go afterwards. Here are my questions to you. In the course of the next 3 days, what simple tools can help your learning become remarkable? Not just more fun, not just good, but remarkable. In the pre-conference questionnaire that we did with Promethean there, did you notice that boring took up 40% of the score? Learning is boring. So find a tool that allows you to become a remarkable teacher. Second thing, how can you create a shared awareness of your learning goals when you're with learners, when you're with your colleagues? When you go back, are you going to hold a mini BLC in your school, in your department, in your local bar? Don't laugh, that's what I do. I get people to pay for the beer. You get 5 tokens, not 1, at my parties. And you talk about what you want to talk about, instead of listening to a keynote speaker for an hour. How can you create a shared awareness? It might be face-to-face, it might be online. It is really important, though. Reaching out to this big, wide community is wonderful, but you've got to somehow bring it back home. That think global, act local. And then the third question, what changes would you make to get small passionate groups of practice, communities of practice, starting up themselves in your school district? Think of yourself as a venture capitalist creating lots of small startups in your school. Little startups that are going to go off and explore new pedagogies, that are going to go off and explore new technologies. Those are the three challenges I would set you for the next 3 days. They're the ones I'm going to try and answer myself. I'm going to leave you with a quote, though, that I think should give you a kick in the right direction. I hope you like it. I'm going to ask you, which one are you? Thank you very much.